Before we start the show, we just wanted to inform you that we are going to spoil the movie Suicide Squad as well as the series Stranger Things. Thanks and enjoy the show.
Hi, I'm Niv.
Hi, I'm Martin.
And we are Asteroids in Exile. Let's do this! Hello everyone, welcome to episode 6 of Asteroids in Exile, the retake. Because we recorded all of this last time, and we lost it all, thanks to my computer crashing problem. So here we go again. So what are we going to talk about today, Martin?
Yeah, well, we've just decided to talk about trailers, to do a live trailer commenting feature on this episode. And we start with a horror movie.
Yeah.
About bodily functions.
Just for something different. So why we're starting with this one is, so I saw this trailer in front of Sausage Party, I think last week or the week before, and it was probably one of the best, most impactful trailers that I've ever seen. It was really cool. So the whole audience was just silent when this trailer was playing before the movie. It was great.
Yeah, I can understand why they were silent, because seeing this on a big screen surely makes an impact.
Yeah.
With the right sound system.
Yeah, and the fact that it's just what I loved about the trailer, it was done like the story. So it sort of sets up pretty much the story in the movie. So it's like you can watch this and you don't even have to watch. I mean, so to a point, it's actually not so good because you don't have to watch maybe the first third of the movie because it pretty much tells you all of that.
All of that.
You just don't know how it's going to get resolved in the end, but it just looks so cool, like one of the coolest trailers. So were we actually going to play this while we talked about it?
Yep. 1, 2, 3, play.
So from the directors of The Evil Dead.
Which is a good thing.
Yeah.
Or was a good thing. Have you seen the series?
Evil Dead, no. That's
yeah.
I haven't seen that. It's one of those things that we need to talk about for season 2.
Yeah.
And what's going to be our approach?
A classic. You know,
yeah.
That's what's bothering me about such movies, all the stuff with her daughter and setting up the people, because you could easily set up the whole thing in the car ride to the guy's house.
Yeah. But it's, you know, the cinematography and the colors and stuff look really cool on this movie.
Yeah.
The shadows here just look so great. And I love the setup. Like, it's such a mundane, suburban kind of start. You know, it's just, you know, people living their lives in a very normal way, which is how all good horror movies start.
Start, yeah. And all the premise with the blind dude.
Who's there?
Yeah.
Stay right there.
Who turns out to be effectively blind Cable Deadpool.
It's the audition tape for
Cable. Yeah, I know, right?
And that's what he can do in the dark.
Yeah. So, like, even when I was watching it in the cinema, everyone was kind of just talking and chatting to each other because it's the trailers, right? So you can chat over the trailers. But when it started to come to this part, everyone just fell silent and they just watched, like, the rest of the trailer. That's really cool.
That sequence when he walks around, walks along the corridor, the guy hides. It looks amazing, but there was a Swedish or a Finnish movie about a pregnant woman seeking refuge with an old lady.
Mm-hmm.
And the old lady wants to cut the baby from her.
Oh, really?
For some occult reason, and the whole movie only plays in the house. It was a really great movie, but I forgot the name.
How old is that now? Like
3 or 4 years.
Okay, so it's not like super old. Okay.
No.
I really like this black and white part in this movie. So using like the night vision, so he brings them all to his level of being blind, except that obviously he's got an edge. Yeah, and that was really cool. No, so that was like one of the coolest trailers. And I think the experience of being in the theater and watching it with other people was just amazing.
Yeah.
Really cool.
And I hope they can translate that feeling of suspicion suspense. It feels like a modern thing that Hitchcock would do.
Yeah, it does.
Would have.
Yeah, it does feel very Hitchcockian.
More action heavy, but
well, more slasher blood heavy, because there's a lot of crazy stuff happening in that house, right?
Yeah,
So, all right. So that was the Don't Breathe trailer that we watched, and it was the official one. So the official trailer HD from Sony Pictures on YouTube. Definitely worth checking out. And if you get to see it in the cinemas, even better. So what's the next trailer? You want to check out The Arrival that came out lately? Yeah. All right, so you want to count down. 3, 2, 1, play.
I really like the premise of the movie because I read a book recently called The Guild of Xenolinguists,
mm-hmm.
where you just have people translating alien languages between aliens and human and aliens. It's a great book, so I dig the idea. But I'm afraid late in the movie when they mention that war has broken out again,
yeah.
or attacks. I fear that the movie will fall apart.
The start of this trailer is great. I mean, this whole setup, like the build up to the suspense of what's going on, the ships and bringing, I think it's Amy Adams bringing her out there to talk to them and stuff is great. What's happening in the last third of the trailer, I have no idea. It's like, I don't understand why war is breaking out. And like, are the aliens sowing division between the different human countries? And if so, how are they doing that? Because they can't talk to us because she's the only one who can translate their language. You know, so I don't understand how that's working.
It's just a case of human nature.
Like, yeah, true.
If we can kill it. If it bleeds, we can kill it.
Yes. The Will Smith approach to diplomacy is... But the trailer, this part's awesome. It's
impossible to do. Yeah, but it's a bit overplayed that she just takes her suit off and just wanders off. Touching things.
Yeah, I mean, it's always that situation when you go to a movie like this where you're like, you know, this thing's probably been here for like the last, I don't know, couple days, right?
Yeah.
And this is the first time. It's like no one else has thought of doing that. But at the same time, maybe she is the first one, and that's why the movie's about her. You know,
somebody has to do it. First steps, but it's.
Yeah. But I'm just hoping it's not like Contact, where you just go through that whole movie and then it's like, you know, the aliens her father.
Yeah.
Like, it'll be interesting to see whether, like, China and Russia and the other countries involved here are actually learning things that the Americans don't know. And that's why it's becoming such a divisive thing.
What the hell is she doing? Yeah, well, the trailer doesn't give too much away.
That's
a good thing.
Which is good, I mean... Yeah, go on.
I'm sorry, that was Forrest Whitaker, the high-ranked military guy. Ah, nice.
Yeah, so that was good. I mean, visually, it looks like a great movie. Like, they really spent... It looks like they spent the money where they should have with the special effects. Because it looks pretty good. So when does that actually come out, though, The Arrival? November 11.
In November? Oh, it's not that long.
Armistice Day. Right? Or is that Remembrance Day? I'm not sure. But yeah, so, that was cool. I think Forrest Whitaker in that role and Amy Adams, like, the cast is pretty good.
Yeah, and Hawkeye is in there as
and
well.
And Hawkeye, Jeremy Renner.
Hawkeye. Hawkeye, cool. Poor man's Jason Bourne.
So that's The Arrival. So out of Don't Breathe and the Arrival, I don't know, I think they're both kind of on par with for me, you know, in terms of anticipation. I want to watch them both. But The Arrival is obviously going to be a bit more spectacular, just in terms of action sequences, I think.
Yeah, I have to admit I'm looking forward to The Arrival more, because I'm not that much of a horror guy, or a slasher guy.
Yeah, for the most part, I don't like slasher movies, but I like a good horror movie, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, which means that I, you know, find myself not being able to sleep a lot. But comes with the territory. All right, so we're going to move on to the Rogue One trailer. So give me a countdown.
Okay, 3, 2, 1, go.
So, I mean, talking about special effects and talking about putting the money where it needs to go, this whole thing just looks so great.
Yeah, and it feels so episode 4-like. So worn down and... Lived in?
It does feel lived in. That's a great way to describe it. Like, it feels like this is a world that we're just viewing in on. It's updated just a little bit to like make it a movie that is coming out in 2016, but it's got that it's got that look and feel which goes right back to the original trilogy, which is so cool.
I mean, look at the clothes. If you look at the uniforms, they really look like 70s fashion cuts.
Yeah,
people look like from a long, long time ago, except for the armor plating and stuff. That
well, that's armor plating if it was done in the 70s. And Donnie Yen, I mean, I still think he should have just been a Jedi, you know. But at this point, but at this point in the story, like, the Jedi are being hunted, right? They're pretty much extinct. So
yeah, but the Yoda's out there. You have the
that's true.
The rebels.
The Empire is pretty much at its strongest point when we come into this movie, right? So this, and going into Episode 4.
And it's sad that they didn't use Thrawn.
Well, that's coming though, right?
Yeah.
But that battle on the beach is like one of going to be obviously the big spectacular action set piece of this movie. And even here, like, it's just looks so great. I want to see those AT-ATs on the beach with the palm trees and everything. It just looks so awesome.
Yeah, and I've never thought that a beach could be a great setting for a sci-fi battle.
For Star Wars, yeah. No, it's great. I mean, in terms of building up the atmosphere, in terms of really setting the scene and getting the expectations and hype ready,
And there's really many nice little touches, like the other focus jump into hyperspeed.
Yeah.
It's just those little things, and the droid that Judy is playing.
I was going to ask, was that an out of focus jump into hyperspace, or were my eyes just teary?
Nice.
Yeah. No, it was cool. I mean, it's just, there's so much in this trailer that I am trying to avoid watching it over and over again.
Really?
Which is, because I, you know, again, coming out of my experience with the first X-Men movie, where I watched that trailer so many times, and then when I saw those scenes in the movie, it was just jarring for me. I do want to just watch this and experience it in context for the first time, you know.
Yeah, well, it's not that long anymore. It's 4 months.
Yeah, because, you know, like, as soon as she, like, you know, there's that scene where she's on the bridge and she gets in, and then that TIE fighter kind of rises up. You know, when I see that in the movie now, as soon as she gets on the bridge, I'm like, ooh, the TIE fighter's coming. You know, like, it's going to really take me out of the story.
But perhaps they turn it around and Vader will appear in that scene.
Yeah. Well, that'll be cool. That Vader, just that last bit of him looking at the map and just the breathing. Really great touch at the end.
I hope he's not in the movie for too long.
Yeah, I mean, it really needs to be their story.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a little bit risky, right? Depending on how this is going to go and fill in that gap that everyone, you know, has so many expectations for. It's kind of like, it's like Episode 3 almost, in the sense that, you know, everybody knows what's going to happen. It's just about seeing how it happens, and is that going to be able to satisfy the fan base and make sense to people at the same time.
And you know what the most interesting thing will be? The fact that a lot of people don't realize that this is not a continuation of Episode 7.
But yes, we're skipping all over the place, right?
Yeah. That would be interesting how many people will walk out of that movie and think, what, they brought Vader back? Why isn't it there?
It's like, where's Kylo Ren and Rey and, you know?
Where are those guys?
This movie made no sense at all. But I guess, you know, the starting the little the starting description with all the words going up the screen, that's going to set the scene for everyone anyway.
Yeah.
So hopefully people read the whole thing, you know.
This is not a continuation.
Remember Episode 3? This one follows a little bit after that. And if you've watched Star Wars Rebels, it's even after that.
Then somebody in the audience, I'm 5 years old.
It's like, what is all that writing, Dad? Yeah. So
just see Rebels.
So, I mean, this is obviously going to be huge when it comes out. So, release date is December, right? We're still waiting for December for
the
this one?
16th?
December 16th, So, still a while to go. So, there you go. We actually went in a little bit of a order there for when the trailers are coming out. So going further forward in time then, and following on the Star Wars theme, the Star Wars Season 3, so for Star Wars Rebels, that trailer was released as well. And we're big fans of Star Wars Rebels in this podcast. So do you want to do a quick review of that one as well?
Yeah, let's do that. Will you count us down?
All right, so we're going to look at Star Wars Rebels Season 3 trailer official from the Star Wars YouTube account. And press play in 3, 2, 1, play. And we hear, as soon as the trailer starts, we hear the Darth Vader breathing. Yeah.
And the goosebumps are coming in. Oh, Kanan. I like the mask.
Looks so good. Yeah, if you haven't seen Season 2, you really have to. Because this picks up like probably, I don't know, it feels like a year has gone by.
Yeah.
I'm so... Ezra's character development and change over time has just been so cool. And now seeing him stray towards this darker path is going to be really cool.
Yeah. And it's neat. The new outfits are really nice because Kanan looks like more like a scholar. And Ezra... He looks darker. It's the same colors, but he looks more serious.
He looks older, which is like, I'm sure they've sort of changed his facial bone structure a little bit to make him kind of like more grown up.
And the haircut is doing a lot.
Yes. I like the long hair though. That was cool.
Yeah, it took me two rounds with the trailer to get used to the shorter hair.
Yeah. But the shorter hair, I mean, it's a metaphor for, cutting ties, it's like getting rid of his childhood self and not now becoming a grown-up.
Yeah, it's like reducing a way to hide himself.
Yeah, well, that's true too. He's not hiding behind his hair. I really... You don't like those two?
No, I don't like Sabine's haircut.
All right. Her hair's faded. Yeah, like there seems to be a massive metaphor around hair in this show for season 3. Because Kanan's got his hair fully covered with a helmet, Ezra's hair's cut, Sabine's hair's faded. Does that like mean she's going to dilute a bit of her personality and become something else as well?
Yeah, she made contact with the Mandalorians in season 2, perhaps. Well, I hope that there will be.
So maybe it's
a jetpack.
Yeah, so maybe it's. Obviously. Yeah. So the action in this season just looks just amazing. Off tap as well. Like, it looks really cool.
That show really went a long way. And
yeah.
There he is.
The one that you've been waiting for.
Yeah. Old red eyes.
Yeah. So. Grand Admiral Thrawn. So, really cool in terms of setting up and building out the universe as well, to have another bad guy and not just have so much dependent on Darth Vader. I'm the one in the middle, the Bendu. And it's almost like, this is almost like Avatar, The Last Airbender, Season 3 as well. You know, Ezra meets the lion turtle.
It's an interesting factoid, the Jedi Knights were called Jedi Bendu in the original draft.
Oh, right.
For Star Wars.
Really? I did not know that. Of their own destruction.
Ezra, turn away before it's too late. The Black Blade is back.
Where was that? I've never seen that before.
It was in Rebels. Pre-Whistler had that thing.
Oh, okay. Season 1, or...?
I don't know. I don't know in which season it's...
Because, I mean, there's only 2 seasons. I don't remember it from Season 2, so I don't know.
I don't know, from... I'm sorry, not Rebels. Clone Wars.
Oh, okay, yeah. I didn't watch all of Clone Wars. I didn't have access when I was living in China, so... I only watched parts of it.
It's on Netflix.
Is it? Oh, yeah. Yes, it is. Yeah, I just haven't gone back. There's just so much in my queue to watch.
I can totally relate to that.
Cool. So, something else I was going to say about... I forgot now. But anyway, it looks great. I mean, really excited about this coming season. And it's coming this fall, so it should be starting at any time, really.
Yeah,
I mean,
3 weeks. September 24th.
Oh, cool. Wow. So, yeah. Wow.
But you know what's bothering me? The Christmas break or the long breaks during Christmas and spring that most shows in the US have.
Yeah.
it takes away so much of the drive that,
that so it really need. Yeah, it really breaks the momentum of, like, that's why normally I actually, for stuff like this, because of that winter break, I like to just wait for all the episodes to come out and then watch them in a binge watch rather than week by week, because I just get so frustrated.
I wish I had been resolved. I tried it with season 2 of Rebels, but it just started so great that I couldn't do it. I had to watch the whole thing.
Yeah.
Like they showed the first episode in summer for season 2, shortly after the celebration event that they premiered it.
All right.
Yeah, it was like 2 months until the actual season started.
And so you had to wait 2 months for episode 2.
I couldn't keep myself from watching it.
Yeah. No, it's cool. I mean, for me, Star Wars Rebels is a bit of a comfort show, so I love to watch it on like a Saturday morning, you know, look with having breakfast or something. Yeah. And, you know, so being able to watch 2 or 3 episodes in a go while I'm just sort of relaxing on the couch is great. If I had to only watch that 20-minute episode and then wait a week or so for the next one, it would just drive me crazy. Then I'd go and watch like BoJack Horseman or something, but that's too depressing to watch. to watch on a Saturday morning, yeah. So, no, it looks awesome. I'm really excited for the action, and you know the show is really really smart in the way it's organizing the characters and just that story between the light and the dark side and Ezra's struggle. It's being played out really well, I think. Well, yeah. You know, because he's being tempted towards, because he's got the Sith cube, right?
Yeah.
Or the little Sith. Is it called the Sith
holocron,
cube?
A holocron.
The holocron. So he's got that. And I'm sure Kanan doesn't know that he's kind of looking at it, kind of like my precious, you know?
I guess Kanan knows, you know?
You think Kanan's...
Speculation. I think Kanan's in the know, now that he's blind. You know, he embraced
it. He'd be able to sense it, for sure, yeah. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. And Ezra's... Because I just was reminded of, like, the Jedi and the Sith, kind of, like, they have, like, the oaths or something. And the Jedi's is all about, like, you know, through, you know, not being passionate, through, like, disconnecting myself from it, I find peace. And from, you know, so it's like... It's like more of a Zen thing, whereas the Sith one is always like, through passion I find strength, through strength I find power, through power I find, you know, glory or victory or whatever it is. And it's like really interesting to see those two different sides, especially when a lot of what Ezra's motivation is around like revenge and stuff for his parents, right? So which way is he, you know, does he want to find peace or does he want to find victory? You know, it's really, really interesting.
It'll be interesting how the lion turtle factors into that, because he says he's in the middle, and in Clone Wars there was the planet with the Force beings, the father and the two and his kids.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to those explanations, because I didn't get there's not enough information in the trailer, so
yeah, it'll be interesting to see how he.
Is that in the books? Like, is that as a part of the Star Wars canon?
The thing with the whole planet that's inhabited by only... Yeah, that's in Clone Wars.
Right.
Season 3 or 4.
Okay, I really need to go back and watch Clone Wars now.
Yeah, they're actually good episodes in that show. I was completely dismissive of that show until I started watching it in order. There are some viewing orders on the net. Floating around on the internet, and then if you watch it in that order, the show really comes into its own.
Right. Okay. Cool. Were they played out of order on TV?
Yes.
Or is there a separate order to the actual TV order?
No, there's a separate order to the actual TV order, and TV order is all over the place. It seems
so. So even if I watch it on Netflix, it's out of order, and I've got to reorder the. Man, that's why do they do that?
Yeah, but the lists are actually curated very well, because you have like 4 or 5 episodes in a row.
Yeah.
That you can watch, and then you jump to another season and watch 2-3 episodes there, jump to another season. And it's only for the first 3 seasons from season 4, everything runs in order.
Right, okay. Interesting.
It's
all right.
Not that much of a bother.
All right. Well, I'll have to look that up then. Yeah. He's like, I can contend with this. This is fine.
Yeah, it was totally awesome. I thought I'd give up.
When you're complaining about the episode orders of a TV show, I think, you know,
yeah,
things are not that bad. So, no. All right. Cool. So, all right, I'll put that on my list then. It'll be my next weekend comfort show. Having breakfast or something.
Yeah. Clone Wars is really good for that. I always confuse it with Rebels.
Yeah. Clone Wars. All right, cool. So yeah, that was, you know, there's a big Star Wars push coming. So we're going to have the new season coming out of Rebels and then the movie coming out in December, which I'm super looking forward to.
Yeah.
All right, cool. So the next set, so we'll just do a quick rundown of the trailers from San Diego Comic-Con, because we covered that last time, but we need to recover it again. And we'll just go with sort of high-level impressions, right? Because I think we don't want to go into too much of detail at this stage. So we'll just go down the list. So we'll talk about the Netflix ones first. So there was a Luke Cage trailer. What's your impression of that one?
It's amazing. I'm really looking forward to the show.
Yeah. So it looks really gritty. It looks really like, you know, torn from the streets and the headlines with like the gang war and stuff. It feels a bit small in scope, but I think, you know, in terms of where the Defenders are playing and just Luke Cage's story, I hope it's a more personal story because the scope feels a bit smaller. Like it's not, and you know, he's not trying to save the world. It'll be cool if he's just trying to save himself or, you know, somebody else.
And have you seen there's a new trailer thingy on there where we get a sequence how he could have gotten his powers, and he's wearing the tiara as part of the machine he's strapped in.
Oh, seriously? Yeah. No, I've not seen that new one.
I giggled like a madman when I saw it. It was awesome.
Do you think they called it a tiara when they were putting it on him?
No, it's probably a psychic stimulation.
Yeah, it's probably some mental brain thing, but yeah. Put on the brain tiara.
It looked so awesome. I'm so glad they kept it in as a reference, at least.
That's really cool. Like even with, I think it was Age of Apocalypse as well, where Wolverine, when he's gets revealed for how he was created, and he comes out in that iconic, what do you call that? It's not really a costume, but
the Weapon X harness.
Yeah, the Weapon X harness. it's cool when you have those sorts of sequences that are just like, that's just from the comic page. It looks really cool. But so that should be coming out not too far away, I think. And then we've got Iron Fist as well. So that's in September, which is like, what, a couple days away at this stage.
I think next week or in 2 weeks.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. So that's going to be one weekend gone, just watching Luke Cage, for sure. And then Iron Fist, so that comes out...
next year.
So that's early next year, right? Yeah. The Iron Fist, all we saw was really just him punching through a wall, right? Yeah. So,
Showing us how doors in Kunlun work. They don't have any.
We don't have doors. What is this?
We don't believe in doors. Only for the dragon.
Yeah. So, I mean, we didn't really see much, but we're waiting on more from Iron Fist. I think from what we've seen, it's interesting. I need to see more before I get fully excited over it, though.
At least we got the origin story for the iPod that he's using. Because you see it lying in the snow.
Yeah.
it's plane crash.
It's been with him the whole time.
it's such a nice detail because I gushed all over when I saw that he's using a third-gen iPod.
Yeah.
And it dates the show to a certain degree.
Well, it does date the show. I wonder if they're going to have music from, like, you know, the mid-2000s then while he's using that iPod.
That would be interesting.
So it's kind of like Star-Lord's cassette tapes, you know, his mixtapes. So that's Iron Fist. And then they also had a Defenders teaser, which was just kind of the Defenders title. So, I mean, not really much to talk about there, except that it was made up from all of their different logos. So, yeah.
Yeah, and they play Nirvana this space. In the background.
So is it Come As You Are, right?
Yeah.
Which is an interesting choice.
Yes.
Yeah. It's got that grungy grittiness to it, which is cool. So, you know, it's like the grown-up Avengers, you know? It's like...
We can't compare music in the background.
Yeah, because it's low Generation X. So, you know, as a random story, I went to, on Monday night, Pearl Jam played here in Chicago, so I went to the Pearl Jam concert. And it was a very Gen X crowd. It was pretty cool. Because obviously, like, anyone who's, like, in their 20s that I spoke to about going to the Pearl Jam concert, they really didn't seem very interested because they were like, oh, you know, Pearl Jam is, like, classic rock, right? But all the people there were like, obviously, Gen X. And every second person around us was smoking pot. So I got, like, the biggest contact high from that concert. It was crazy.
And it's interesting. I worked on three Pearl Jam gigs, and backstage, nobody was smoking pot. Well, not obviously.
Well, I would hope that backstage wasn't, but the audience here in Chicago, there was a lot of pot in the air, let me tell you. Was it the same tour? So I don't even remember the name of the tour that Pearl Jam had.
I don't know. I worked the last time I saw Pearl Jam as part of my professional life was in 2012 or 2013.
Oh, right. Okay. So a while. Yeah, this latest one was cool. I mean, they played Wrigley Field, and it was packed out. There must have been like 50,000 people there. Yeah, so it was huge.
It's the same thing. Three gigs, all sold out.
Wow. Really cool. They were pretty good. The sound quality, like watching a concert in Wrigley Field when you're kind of like in the stands where we were, because we had not so much cheap seats because tickets were super expensive. But the sound wasn't great. So I'd love to be in like the mosh pit. I'd love to be up the front in general admission, where the sound would be much better, but I'm just too small because I would get trampled down there.
That's strange. I mean, I was at a lot of metal concerts in my youth, and I remember mosh pits being very civilized back then. At the
Sepultura
gig, I dropped my glasses and immediately I had my personal force field of people who carried a perimeter so I could look for my glasses.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, it was great. And afterwards, we moshed on.
I was going to say, is that...
Back in the 90s.
We were also, like, civilized and caring for one another.
Yeah. And then I was at... I worked at a Devil Driver gig years ago. It was in 2007. Mm-hmm. And somebody in the mosh pit kept punching people unconscious.
What?
Yeah, nothing was done. They were just thrown aside to the first aid responders. And that's
that's crazy. Thought,
well, those are mosh pits today. I'd be dead by if I had the mosh pit today.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I mean, that just sounds crazy. That's what I'm scared of. That's what I'm
scared
of.
Only sharks out there.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, I mean...
clownfish.
clownfish. And we don't have any coral to hide behind in a mosh pit. Yeah. That's the problem. The chairs are our coral. Our coral when we are in the stands. That's why we're happy to just stand there and have the safety net to sit down when things get too much. Oh, well. All right, cool. So so that was the Netflix trailers. Then there was the DC trailers that came out of Comic-Con as well. So Wonder Woman was the trailer that stole the show for me from the DC side. That was just super cool, super awesome to see. To see the way they put the action sequences together, her fighting style, we get to see all of the cool stuff. So we saw the lasso, we saw the sword and the shield, the gauntlets, you know.
Yeah, it certainly built some confidence.
Built some confidence until the news came out earlier this week that there's a little bit of background issues. And I think, I'm not sure, but I think, you know, double check the details around this, but I heard that they were doing some rewrites or reshoots or something like that. For some parts of it. So hopefully that's not a bad sign. I mean, reshoots in itself is not a bad thing.
No, part of the contract anyway. So.
Well, it's a part of the process of making a movie, right? But recently, when you look at Suicide Squad and stuff like reshoots have been a harbinger for bad output at the end of the process. So let's hope that Wonder Woman continues to look and come out as good as we expected to. So it's the one I'm most excited for still out of the DC movies. Yeah. The Justice League trailer looked all right. I mean, they didn't really show us all that much, but I mean, they showed all of the characters and stuff like that, but I hope that it's not a full letdown.
No, you know? And the trailer felt more like a response, like something they just, they made up in a hurry to show at Comic-Con. just to show some progress or some progress in a certain direction.
And it was almost like to save face a little bit. Like, you know, we know we're getting a lot of bad press and a lot of bad reviews from all the other movies. So, hey, look, we're still in the game and we've still got all this cool stuff coming down. So don't lose hope. So for that effect, I think it worked. I think the Justice League trailer looked very good. It inspired a lot of confidence.
Yes.
And it got, because I'm excited for it. I'm just, you know, I've still got that caveat that I hope that it doesn't just fall apart at the seams. Because again, we've got Zack Snyder behind this, and you know.
Yeah, but you know, I guess he has to change his tone, so to say.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. I think if you watch the DC movies as a fan, so Suicide Squad was a mess from a movie making point of view. It was a mess.
Yeah.
The characters were not used as well as they could have been. There were characters in there that were just wasted. I mean, this is, you know, did we do a Suicide Squad review? I don't know, but...
we did the review, but it was shortly afterwards that the recording...
Oh, so we actually should have... Yeah, so in the last time we went extensively and sort of talked about what Suicide Squad was like, right? And it wasn't all that great. I mean, it was a mess. Characters were wasted, like we said, and they had... But there was so much of potential with the story. There was so much of potential with the characters that it could have been really cool the way they pulled it together, except it would have been a completely different movie.
Yeah.
And they tried to make it funny. Like, they tried to capitalize off, like, Deadpool's success and, like, make it quirky and have Harley Quinn have cool one-liners. But half the time, like, when I watched it in the cinema, people didn't even laugh at half the jokes. Like, they just fell flat. And the whole movie was like that. It's kind of like, oh, let's just put this line in out of context and out of nowhere, and then it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
So I hope that they don't do something similar with Justice League. Like, I hope they don't just try to recut the movie to make it something that it's not supposed to be. Like, if they're going to go with that Zack Snyder vision of making it dark and stormy and super serious and, you know, self-internal story... and self-assured, they should just go ahead and do that. Don't try to make it something else.
Yeah.
Because Batman v Superman, for what it was, outside of the context of like the Marvel movies and what happened with Deadpool and how cool that was, if you just watch Superman versus Batman versus Superman by itself, it kind of works as a movie. It's not a great, you know, it's not perfect. It's got this hour and a half long build-up to a fight that, you know, you're like, I still don't understand why they're fighting.
Yep.
But it kind of works. And so you could, you know, I think Batman v Superman had the, I'm starting to forget English now, but Batman v Superman actually worked, I think, as a story, where Suicide Squad, because it was so chopped up and messed about, just didn't work.
I think that Batman vs. Superman didn't work as a story because there's just there are too many contradictions.
Yeah,
on itself, but you know, we could write books about that and cinematography. But what works for the DC movies is that the cinematography feels more intimate than in the Marvel movies. I feel a bigger distance between me and Captain America in a Marvel movie than I feel between me and Superman in a DC movie or Batman. I don't know how else to put it, and that could work. That's the biggest strength for the DC movies for me right now. It feels more intimate. I feel
closer to the character.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you feel the same for the Netflix shows?
To a certain degree, I think when Daredevil is the first thing that came to mind, because when he's Matt Murdock, the show feels much more airy. The shots feel wider than when he's Daredevil, where I really think that everything that goes on screen is an extension of the character, and the camera stays close to him.
Right. It's an interesting one. I think the color palette as well as the camera adds to that.
Yeah.
The Marvel movies like Civil War and Avengers and stuff, they've got a very much a comic book sheen to them. Yeah. Like, it's bright, it's colorful. That is clearly not a world that easily fits in with our world, you know, because of it's got that distance, like you said. Whereas I think the way that the DC movies and even the Netflix series, it's more gritty. The colors are not as hyper saturated as the Marvel cinematic movies. So it's it is cool, and I think that is one of the strengths. You know, that's one of the things I liked about Batman v Superman. And for me, the Batman movies always work well when they're a bit darker. You know, yeah, so not the Joel Schumacher movies. Yeah, so that was that makes sense, and I think it really does draw you in. I think when it's darker, because you can relate to it a lot better. I think,
and that's perhaps the reason why the Jessica Jones series could have worked better with less episodes. Because she has no alter ego, it's uh-huh. always her. There's no change in what you just described. It's not like Daredevil that when he's Matt Murdock, you can use another color palette, another set of lenses to really emphasize that he's out of the costume.
Yeah.
And so with Jessica Jones, you always have the close up, so to say. It centers around the psychological issue of abuse.
Yeah.
Also,
which is. Which is something that needs to be, like, you can't have that story and have a distance between the audience and the character right? So it needs to be close up. Yep. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see how they do Luke Cage then, because he's in that similar situation. He doesn't wear a costume. He is Power Man no matter where he is, right?
Yeah.
So I wonder how they will do that. I mean, it kind of feels like it's a very, a street gangster type of storyline.
Yeah.
And so it'll be interesting to see whether they do comic book conventions or whether they will do kind of that organized crime type movie conventions with the way they do the show.
Yeah.
Very exciting. That's cool. So that's pretty much it, I think, when it comes to the trailers that we talked about, right?
Yeah.
Suicide Squad, I mean, I don't think there's anything more to say about that.
No, I think everything has been said. Did we talk about the whole thing that they should have centered the movie about around Rick Flag and introduce...
For Suicide Squad?
Yeah. Did we talk about that last week?
I don't know, because my thing is they didn't need Rick Flag in that movie. They should have just had Deadshot as the main character.
Yeah.
Because Rick Flag's character and Deadshot's character was so similar, there was no need for both of them.
Yeah, well, Deadshot got the better actor.
Yeah, well. So what's your idea around Rick Flag and centering the movie around him?
They should have introduced him as a, having screwed up... In a war situation as a soldier and being sent to prison for it, and introduced the Suicide Squad through him, because in the comics he's the not the ultimate soldier, but he's he believes in the military and the honor and stuff, and that could have been the anchor to center the Suicide Squad around, this moral intact person that's trying to. To say
has to work with these bad guys and villains
to do something good. Humanize them through that, because he shouldn't have given them, he has to work with what he's got, and so he doesn't give them crap but tries to utilize them and make them feel more human.
So I think that would have been, again, talking to the potential that the Suicide Squad movie had, a great way to frame that. So if Rick Flag was a kind of a disgraced soldier, but has very strong, like, moral and ethical center, and he's trying to redeem himself for something bad that he did by joining, by being a part of the Suicide Squad. And so, so he's the viewer's entry point into this team of established villains who are already established to be working together. That would have been really cool.
Yeah.
So he's the new person in the team, and he needs to harmonize his feelings around working with a bunch of villains to do something good. That would have been a cool story. And in the process, like you said, so seeing their humanity and seeing almost the part of the monster that's in him, and they come to an understanding between each other.
Yeah, that would have been great.
Would have been much more interesting than, my girlfriend's a witch and I've got to stop her. It felt like that whole thing was so contrived. And that's the other point too, is like, So I read a comment, I don't think it was on Twitter or something, but, they assemble a Suicide Squad. Amanda Wallace assembles a Suicide Squad to be the force that they could call on if Superman or a Superman-like creature ever got out of control. And you're like, really? A crocodile guy? This is the team you put together? Like, surely you'd find a bunch of better powered people, because some of their powers are pretty lame. Like, Harley Quinn's just human, right? Deadshot's just human. I mean, he's got a superhuman ability, I guess, when it comes to, like, aim, but otherwise, he's just human. Same with Captain Boomerang. Like, they're all just physically would not be able to put up with Superman, I think, even as a team.
Yeah.
Unless they're going to fire a kryptonite. So unless everyone else is going to distract Superman and Deadshot's going to fire a kryptonite bullet at him, I don't know how that...
Yeah, how that works. Yeah, well, they had the supernatural belly dancer.
The witch... Well, Enchantress by herself maybe could have contended with Superman, right? But she's also out of control.
That's it.
because Superman is not impervious to magic attacks.
Oh, yeah, I forgot that. Yeah.
So he is vulnerable to magic. That was... I remember that clearly established in the Smallville TV series, actually.
Yeah, yeah, it's a fact. Well, the comics, I don't know if it's in the movie universe as well.
Well, in the movie universe, Enchantress is the first magic character they've had.
Oh, yeah,
so
that we encountered, yeah.
Yeah, so that will be the first time. And it's interesting. So the other one, I think he's also not impervious, just skipping back to Justice League.
Aquaman, yeah.
To Aquaman's trident. So Aquaman's trident can pierce his skin, apparently. So that's the other cool thing. So I'd love to see that fight. Because Aquaman...
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say. So, I mean, because Aquaman's superpowered, and he's got the trident, which could actually... it's effectively like the lance that Batman creates, the kryptonite lance in the first movie.
Yeah.
The trident serves a very similar purpose, you know, except that it's not made out of kryptonite.
And it would be interesting if he's impervious, if he's vulnerable to nth metal as well, because we have Hawkgirl in the Legends of Tomorrow. Oh, the TV shows are not connected with the... With
no.
The movies. Okay.
That's why we got two Flashes.
Yeah.
Do we just... So they have released the images and we've seen that in the trailer as well for the characters. What do you think, like, if we just go down the line, what do you think of the look and feel of the characters? So the Flash, start with the Flash.
The Flash looks like Iron Man to a certain degree.
Yeah, it's very much like an exoskeleton armor compared to just a Flash suit, which comes out of a ring. Yeah,
it could work. It could totally work. I'm just not on board with Ezra Miller.
Oh, really?
And how he's written. I prefer Grant Gustin.
Mm-hmm.
I've only seen like 3 episodes of the Flash TV show, but I think he's a pretty...
So you've seen about as much of Grant Gustin as you've seen of Ezra Miller.
Of Ezra Miller, yeah.
They're on par.
But I, you know, he screams Barry... Grant Gustin just screams Barry Allen.
Mm-hmm.
Louder than Ezra Miller to me.
Than Ezra Miller, yeah.
But Ezra Miller is another kind of Flash. Like the conversation he has with Batman about not having any friends and needing social contact. Let's see how that plays out.
Yeah.
But at the moment,
I'm a Flash TV series fan, so I'm quite used to Grant Gustin as the Flash. And I think he's a good Flash. I really like him. I think Ezra Miller is going to bring something very different to that. So it's like, you know, your alternate version of Barry Allen. And I'm looking forward to it. I mean, it's going to be refreshing, I think. Ezra Miller in the trailers, just with the way that he approached the character. I hope they don't make him too funny.
Yeah.
You know, because he's not supposed to be like the comedian. But... I think it's going to bring something different to Barry Allen, which is going to make that team work. And I think that's really the role of the Flash in a lot of the Justice League, is to really be the heart of the team, because they're all so, you know, self-righteous and self-serious that he's the one that's kind of like, hey guys, you know, we just need to just look at, you know, get some perspective here, you know, especially with the team. Like even, you know, Cyborg just looks, he's like, he's going to be very dark.
Yes.
We didn't really see much of Cyborg, but, you know, he's got a lot of emotional weight and trauma associated with that character, even from the way they've shown his creation on the trailers. So I don't think he's going to bring a lot of levity to the movie, and especially the way Zack Snyder's going to do with Zack Snyder's style. Because Cyborg in, like, Teen Titans is a comedian. Like, he's a funny character.
Yeah.
He's playing video games with Beast Boy, you know, on their off time. I don't see this Cyborg doing that.
Yes, with the origin, you can only... With the tragic origin, I should say, because, you know, he's only half a person.
Yeah. Well, he's not even... He's like a third of a person, right?
Yeah. And he's got new Genesis or new God technology in him.
Yeah. So he's literally more machine than man at that point. And more alien than human as well.
That's a source for drama, so to say. Mm-hmm. But... You know, you could, with the team, or with him being in the Justice League, you could lessen the load of his troubles over time, so to say. So perhaps he has an arc in the movie to put his new physiology to use.
That's going to be the challenge of the movie, right?
Yeah.
You've got five major characters all being introduced at effectively the same time.
Yeah.
Except for Batman and Superman, I guess. And to an extent, Wonder Woman. But how do you make sure that they each have, and you know, not even so much enough screen time, but enough of a character arc that the movie makes sense? Or you're just going to have token scenes with Aquaman saying funny stuff or being like Khal Drogo in the background while the main story plays out, you know? So that's what I hope it doesn't become.
Yeah.
So far so good, but hopefully, you know, we don't have another Suicide Squad situation.
No, I don't think so. I think it would, you know, Suicide Squad was already a bit better than Batman vs. Superman, a bit more watchable, I think. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a road they'll be taking. I think they'll get stronger with every movie.
Well, I hope they learn from their mistakes. I know there's some sort of background production changes with the movies, like the producer and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I think they brought in some new people. So hopefully that brings in some of that outside perspective, and they're able to steer the movie to be the movies to be just a little bit better in terms of quality. Because like one thing that's missing from all of these DC movies so far is the level of action. There's like not a lot of action in the movies. Even like so, Batman v Superman was just a lot of intense staring back and forth for the first at least 2/3 of the movie, and all the action was in the last third. And then even with Suicide Squad, there wasn't a lot of action in that movie.
No, and the action was against those minions.
Yeah,
that the Enchantress had or transformed the people into, and it was very anticlimactic. Even with El Diablo and her brother wasn't that great.
I liked El Diablo's transformation in Suicide Squad. But I think, it just felt like it was too quick and came out of nowhere, and then it was over before you fully got to appreciate what was going on. Like, it just felt like a video game cutscene sequence, you know? So
absolutely. And then they killed El Diablo.
Yeah.
When the character got, well, interesting is perhaps too strong a word, but...
Just when you're like, okay, now I see how this is a cool character, but he's dead. You know?
Yeah,
spoiler warning, by the way.
Well, yeah.
So maybe we could just we'll do a spoiler warning introduction before the before the show.
I write that down.
So the standouts for me, I mean, just to wrap up Suicide Squad, was Amanda Waller. I thought Viola Davis in that role as Amanda Waller was just great. She was probably the most intense and well rounded out character, and I think that was all down to the way Viola Davis portrayed the character.
Yeah.
Giving her some depth and, you know, from an acting point of view, it was really good.
Yeah.
Will Smith was pretty good as Deadshot. Harley Quinn, Margot Robbie, I thought was good, but I thought it was overuse of the puns and overuse of the one-line catchphrases.
Yeah.
Which kind of came out of nowhere as well. So it felt really like, it didn't feel organic when she just started calling Mr. J and Puddin' and stuff like that, because you didn't see how that came about. It's like telling an inside joke, but not really being on the inside.
Yeah.
You know? So that felt a bit contrived. But otherwise, I thought Harley Quinn was pretty cool. I'd like to see more of Harley Quinn. And a story with Harley Quinn and the Joker together, because Jared Leto's Joker was good. He just didn't have anything to do in the movie. So I'd like to see the movie, which is how the Joker turns Harleen Quinzel into Harley Quinn. You know, like that would be like a psychological thriller type movie. That would be really cool.
Well, there was this, I hope it's still in planning, but they plan to introduce Green Arrow through a Supermax movie. And I think Heath Ledger did already sign to play the Joker in that movie as well. And it was Oliver Queen in prison with all the DC super
villains.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So
is that like a breakout? Like breaking out from Arkham Asylum or the jail or whatever it is. That would have been cool.
Would have been a great movie. Sad that this thing didn't happen.
Yeah. I mean, the Joker is an interesting character, so they could do so much with it. Let's just hope again, you know, that they don't just flush it down the toilet.
Not with this Joker, I think.
You don't like the Jared Leto Joker?
No, it's, you know, his and Harley's story is basically, it's not an empowering story that people wanted to see.
Mm-hmm.
But it's another anti-feminism thing, because she's a victim and he obviously hands her around like a trophy in the bath. And so I mean, it's totally okay to show it that way, but when the Joker breaks her out of prison at the end, I wish Harley would have resisted the attempt, or even foiled it, to set up the next story. Would have been much more interesting for her character as well, because I thought Harley Quinn was totally misused in this movie. If she wouldn't have been in the squad, nothing would have changed.
Yeah.
She brought nothing to the movie. Even Captain Boomerang brought more to the movie by pointing out that every time she opens her mouth, it's like a knife fight.
Yeah, so I think, you know, it goes back to that point where there was so much potential, but they just totally misdid the whole thing, which is what made it such a mess. Because the Joker just comes off looking like, one, you know, just a really obsessed boyfriend, because all he does in the movie is try to get Harley back.
Yeah.
And at the same time, like you said, treats Harley like a possession that he's trying to get back. You know, like it doesn't come across as a love story, really. There are hints at it, but it doesn't come across as that. It's kind of like he's trying to get his property back and he's obsessive about that. And she's, you know, she's just going to go back to him no matter what, no matter what he does.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's not great. With that relationship, and that's why I would like to have seen that redone as, you know, as something else.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a pretty messed up love story, even if it is a love story. But, you know, if we've seen Natural Born Killers and, you know, all those crazy love stories that do exist, so I can.
It comes with the characters. Can't be a regular thing. I'm aware of that, but.
But you can still empower them, and you can still make them kind of like make sense to each other and to a story, you know, not just be random. Because the Joker just showed up randomly. He really had no reason to be in that movie.
No.
I was waiting for the point where in Joker trying to get back Harley, he also recognizes the danger that Enchantress is providing and begrudgingly joins forces or contributes to taking down Enchantress. That would have made sense.
Yep.
But again, he was just there as an agent of chaos, so just doing random things which didn't contribute to the end story, right? Which would have worked if it was the Heath Ledger Joker, right? Which didn't have any tie to Harley Quinn, you know? But at the same time, because he had this massive tie with Harley Quinn, he didn't also show any care for Harley Quinn, and there's no point in saving her if the world's going to come to an end. Because what's the point of us being together if everything's going to end anyway? I don't know.
Yep.
And they didn't even explain. I don't remember them explaining.
No, there was no explanation. The only thing he was good for was deactivating the collar that they use.
Oh, he deactivated them, right? Yeah.
He got the code for that one, but
yeah, but that was also in his own self interest, and it was like it wasn't again to didn't reach a point where he's like, either I would have liked the Joker to have said, "I don't care that the world's going to burn. I just want you." That would have made sense from a Joker point of view, because then it would explain his motivation for why he continuously goes after Harley and doesn't help. Or he should have said, "I want you back, but there's no point in getting you back if we're all going to die anyway, so let me help."
Yeah.
You know? So those two things would have made sense. But he didn't go in either of those directions. He just kind of randomly showed up and didn't have anything to do with anything. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
Just didn't work for me.
No.
All right. So that's Suicide Squad, you know? See it at your own risk and, you know, enjoy it for what it is, because it's not going to be Shakespeare.
No.
All right. So, shall we move on to some other movie reviews now?
Yes.
So, let's just... we'll do these at the higher level. I think I saw Sausage Party, which was very adult, so don't take your kids to watch this, obviously. But that was funny. It was very funny. It was kind of awkward and... uncomfortable sometimes with some of the jokes, but it was pretty cool. Have you seen that?
No, but I've seen the trailer and I've heard people talk about it. And the interesting thing is that it seems to have a very philosophical premise.
Oh yeah, I mean, even in the movie, it's surprisingly intellectual in some parts. Yeah. It's got some interesting commentary on current events as well. So,
and that was the interesting thing to hear people who are who like cerebral movies discuss Sausage Party.
Yeah, so I was very surprised. Like, I went in expecting a really brainless kind of Seth Rogen movie, but it's surprised with the with the depth of commentary it had. I thought it was quite funny.
Oh, nice.
I mean, and it wasn't even commentary. It was more satire, really. But at the same time, it was funny just to see them go into that territory. It made the movie very interesting, very watchable. But also, it's a bit of a bait and switch because you go in expecting a brainless movie.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Then the first two-thirds of the movie have this kind of quasi-intellectualness about it, with the way that it's talking about like current events and the different types of foods in the food aisle and like belief of what happens to them when they leave the store versus what the reality of what happens to them when they leave the store is. Yeah. That part's really funny. And then the last third of the movie takes another left turn and just goes into a completely different direction. So you got to watch that just to see it because, I mean, you've probably heard what happens towards the end of the movie, but it's in itself something that's like, oh my God, I can't believe they just went there. But you just know that you forget that they were gonna go there when you watch the movie, yeah. And then they go there, and then you're surprised that they went there. So it's done really well. Like as a movie, Sausage Party is really good.
It sounds amazing.
I really recommend it. Like I mean, watch it. It's a roller coaster ride, yeah. For sure. and that's where I saw the Don't Breathe trailer. So if you watch Sausage Party, you get to watch the Don't Breathe trailer in the cinema. And get to experience it with everyone, so it's really cool.
Okay.
That was great. And then I also saw Kubo and the Two Strings, which was just phenomenal. I'll give it like 9 out of 10. Like it was, I really enjoyed it. If you liked Avatar The Last Airbender, yeah. And it's a very sweet, touching story. Like it's, you know, the Kubo and the story of his parents. It's got that mystical, Eastern mystical kind of vibe. You know, it's set in that world. Really good movie.
Nice, because I heard only good things, and the animation is superb, I heard, because is this a stop motion movie?
Yeah, so it was done by Laika, who did Coraline, yeah. And the Box Trolls as well, and it was stop motion, and they pre-3D printed the facial expressions and stuff. Amazing. I think they had something like 48 million facial expressions for this movie, which they blended together digitally. So it was a combination of stop motion with digital effects. When you first start watching it, it is a little bit jarring,
yeah.
Just to sort of get used to it. But once you get used to it, it's great. Like just the experience and the way they put things together, you don't think it's stop motion. It looks so realistic because it is stop motion. So those are actual real figures and stuff. And then in the credits at the end, they just give you a little bit of a glimpse for how they did the puppetry stop motion. And they just give you a small glimpse, and it's done really well because as they're doing it, like the curtains close, like they're showing you a glimpse, but you're not supposed to see behind the scenes. It's really cool.
Amazing.
And then you realize it's like, oh my God, that was actually like they actually built all those things that we just saw. And those weren't just computer animation, you know?
Amazing. Yeah. In a time where everything is done with CGI.
Yeah.
It's great.
So definitely, I mean, it's great to go take the kids and stuff as well. So like I recommended it to my sister for my niece and nephew. I think they'd really enjoy it. And some great action as well. Like there's two or three good action set pieces there.
Amazing, yeah.
So yeah, really cool.
Cool.
Have you seen anything else?
No, I haven't. I haven't watched anything new.
Did you watch the BFG?
Did we say we talk about it? Because that was a depressing movie after the uplifting, after your uplifting review of
Kubo. Now we bring it right back down.
Oh my God. I mean, it's not a bad movie.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I feel like Steven Spielberg lost, I don't want to say talent, because the movie looks great. The score by John Williams is great. It has good ideas at the beginning, at least, because the first 10-15 minutes are very good,
mm-hmm.
and you see you feel the Spielberg magic because he plays with scale, and to me Spielberg always his trademark thing was large stories that mm-hmm. could have easily broken the boundaries in which they were told remain in those boundaries, like in E.T. mm-hmm. where he could have shown that with a much wider scope, like a nationwide search for the alien, but it was always
centered around the kids.
Yeah, and that would have worked for the BFG as well. But as soon as the scope of the movie widens, it falls apart.
You lose that connection with the characters, right?
Yeah, and
I mean, I didn't watch the BFG, but I've heard how where the story goes, and I read it when I was like, I want to say like 10 years old or something, so I can't remember the details, but I was a little bit surprised to hear that the military gets involved in all of these sorts of things, you know?
The military gets involved. There are no shots fired, because I thought the military would just go in and
mow them down.
Yeah. And they don't. That's also...
So it's not a Michael Bay movie.
No. You know, he has to do the Transformers, but Michael Bay's BFG would have been...
Yeah, I want to see that. It'll be like Pacific Rim with the BFG characters.
Yeah, and I'm always joking that I watched... do you know the video game Doom?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I always joke that I watched Doom 2 when I went to see the BFG.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Nobody got that joke. It's also very... I haven't read the book. Are there also only 5 other giants in addition to the BFG?
Yeah, I can't remember now. Like, it was so long ago for me, so...
Because I wish they would have introduced more. You know, at least show a bit
show
of...
Show the giant... So the world building for the giant world, like, wasn't good, or...?
There is no world to build on. There are hints to how it came... To be in the state that it is in the movie, but it's not explored any further.
Right.
You know, it feels like nobody has it. But then the movie centers about dreams and dream logic at a certain point. And as a dream, it's perfect. If you've dreamt the movie, that would have been awesome.
Because then it doesn't need to make complete sense.
And all the kids that were in the audience with us were amazed by the movie as well, and really, really energetic.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's the redeeming quality of the movie, that it taps into some part of our childhood.
Yeah.
But like with Suicide Squad, I saw so much... I wanted it to be so much more. I don't know, since Saving Private Ryan, Spielberg has lost some of his magic.
Yeah,
and
I
not
think
because
so.
Of the subject matter, because I think Saving Private Ryan is a good movie, but it's not a good Spielberg movie. It doesn't feel Spielbergian, so to say.
Yeah, I think, I mean, Spielberg to me at his best was, like you said, E.T. and Jurassic Park. I mean, Jurassic Park's on Netflix. I think it actually goes off Netflix in September.
Yeah.
So September the 1st. So it's only, you know, today's effectively the last day if you want to watch Jurassic Park on Netflix, I think. And I rewatched that recently, and it is such a great movie. Like, Jurassic Park, I just love that movie so much. The first one. And that scene where the T-Rex comes out when the kids are in the car, and Sam Neill and Jeff Goldblum are in the car behind them. One of the most, I think, to me, one of the most perfect scenes in cinema. Yeah. I just love it. It's really cool.
And even if the CGI wouldn't hold up to today's standards, it would still be a great movie and a great scene.
But the thing is, the CGI does, because they use practical effects, right? So they actually had like real robotic T-Rexes and stuff in there. And mixed in with the CGI, like, that was like... it was 1993, right? Jurassic Park. It's just, you know, you watch it now and it's still amazing. It's still amazing to watch. Really cool. But that was like the Spielberg, that was like, I think the best style of Spielberg for me. So, yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I think he hasn't sort of made anything that's really gone back to that kind of style, because it's all about the wonder and the awe of the world, you know?
Yes.
And that's those scenes where, even in Jurassic Park, the first one, when they see the Brontosaurus for the first time, when Sam Neill and Laura Dern, you know, when they drive up in the Jeep and they see it, he doesn't show you the dinosaur. He shows you their faces reacting to the dinosaur, you know?
Yeah.
And then after you see that, that's almost like, you know, building up the tension.
Yeah.
And then you see it. Really, really awesome. Like very well blocked out scenes.
And that's, the same thing happens in the first few minutes of the BFG.
Right.
The sense of wonder, the sense of scale, the gentleness and the consideration that the BFG has to utilize to walk through London in the movie. And all that falls apart as soon as people start opening their mouths and kick the story off, so to say. At least for me, it's a great movie for kids.
Mm-hmm.
It did not click as well with me as I hoped it would.
Yeah, I think from a box office point of view as well, like, it wasn't as great as it
Oh, really?
Was expected to be. Yeah.
Oh, because it got so many good reviews, I thought it would make money.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, we could need to double check that. But from what I remember, I don't think it kind of killed the box office.
Oh.
You can look that up, because I'm not going to play with my Chrome so it doesn't crash again.
Oh man, no. If we believe Box Office Mojo, it made $153 million worldwide with an estimated production budget of $140 million.
So it just about broke even.
Yeah, but
that's
don't
exclusive
know
of marketing budget.
Yep.
Because marketing is almost like another $100 million on top of that, potentially, depending
Suicide
on how.
Suicide Squad had like $500 million marketing alone. I've heard.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Can't believe it. Half a.
That's ridiculous. What? Yeah. And that's why, like, Kubo, I actually went with a friend who didn't want to see it because he's. To him, it just didn't look good.
Yeah.
And he still complains that the movie was great, but the marketing sucked because. He only watched it after we explained, you know, after another friend explained to him what the movie was about and, you know, how they made it and stuff like that.
Because
Kubo had, I think in Chicago, they've got a couple of billboards yeah. of just Kubo and the Two Strings with some pictures of the characters. And some people didn't find that very compelling. So
yeah, you have no marketing in Austria.
Really?
I don't even know when it comes out here.
Wow. Because well, Leica is a very small production house, yeah. right? So they don't really spend all that time and money on marketing, which is unfortunate because their movies tend to be pretty good.
Yeah, we watched Coraline last week with the older niece, and she dug the movie beyond belief because I thought
really?
Not that it would bore her, but that she wouldn't connect with it.
Yeah,
and she totally did. She really enjoyed the movie.
She's a Neil Gaiman fan in the me. In the making.
Yeah. I thought about gifting her a book. Oh, Kubo starts in October in Austria.
All right,
still
okay.
Got a month.
Yeah, it's definitely worth checking out. Make sure you put that on your list.
And it's called Kubo the Brave Samurai here.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Close enough. I mean, well, the Two Strings. I mean, to be fair, the Two Strings as a part of the title doesn't really give you all that much, but it is a part of the movie. Like, it's a part of the movie that goes back to the heart of the movie, but you need to think about it a little bit. So, yeah, I mean, losing that part, I think, to me, doesn't really... You know, if it was called Kubo, the Brave Samurai?
Yeah.
Maybe it'll actually draw in more people because they'd want to see a movie about a samurai. But you're seeing a movie about a guy with two strings, you're like, okay, what? You know, it just doesn't make sense.
That sounds like some, you know, an episode of an amazing serial, like Indiana Jones and... The Temple of Doom,
but even Temple of Doom is like compelling. You know, it's got an intensity about it. The Two Strings, it's like, what do we got? Hair strings? Like, what are we talking about? No spoilers. So cool. But anyway, put that on your list of things to watch. All right. So, anything else in movies? I think we covered most of what was happening in the movie world. I think we need to talk about Stranger Things, right?
Yeah.
He's talking about Spielberg and the 80s. I think
the
Stranger Things was just phenomenal. Was under the radar to a large extent on Netflix. Again, you know, not so much in terms of advertising and stuff for Stranger Things, but word of mouth has been great.
Yeah.
And I watched it, I think I finished watching it like a week or two ago, and it's still one of the coolest things I think I've seen on Netflix in a while.
Yeah, it's amazing to see how many people come out of, who really enjoyed it at first, and now after a certain period come out with their criticism. Of it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So what kind of criticisms are you hearing?
The biggest thing is Winona Ryder's character doesn't get shown before how the character worked before Will was abducted.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think
I don't agree with that though.
No.
Because you get flashbacks actually.
Yeah.
Of her and Will together.
Yeah. And all the conversations and how the few interactions she has with the sheriff and the guy she works for at the store,
mm-hmm.
You clearly see, or you get an echo, so to say, of who and how she operated before the series started.
Yeah, which was interesting in itself, right? Because she goes full freak out, obviously, in the show when her son gets abducted. But when she goes and she's interacting with people, even though she's freaking out, people are still giving her the benefit of the doubt. For the most part, because like you said, there's an echo of who she was, you know, they're like, okay, this is not a crazy woman by default.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give her a little bit of leeway, you know? So I, you know, that's what I think. I think it, as a show, I think overall it was very tightly, like the writing was very good in terms of putting that whole story together, and the editing was really tight in terms of how it put it all on the screen.
Yeah.
Because I think it showed you enough of what she was like when, you know, before the abduction, to not make her like a one-dimensional crazy character, or two-dimensional crazy character as it were. Yeah. So it was cool. I mean, okay. Throw another criticism at me and I will defend this show.
No, the other thing was the how was she called? Barb? Barb's
Barb,
device.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a valid criticism, but then, you know, I expected it. As soon as she disappeared.
Yeah, I mean, but that's also what was so cool about Stranger Things was it took the conventions of a lot of like the horror genre and like the 80s adventure genre and like what we loved about those things and played with them a little bit.
Yep.
And so Barb was the character that needed to die, you know? So spoilers for Stranger Things if you haven't seen it. But, you know, the intensity and the gravity of the situation needs to be illustrated by a character. And I think they put... I actually think Barb was done really well in the sense that... They had a great actress. They set up her relationship with... I can't remember her name now, but the other main girl.
Yeah.
They set up the relationship. They showed the loyalty of Barb.
Yeah.
But they also showed the loneliness of Barb, and they really made you feel for her.
Yeah.
And then they killed her, you know? And it was done really in a really, really emotional way. Like that scene of what else was happening in the background while Barb was sitting on the at the pool. You know, it was a very relatable situation, and it was already so sad and depressing, and then gets even worse.
Yeah. And it was almost poetic because his brother was taking the photo of her next to the pool. And
I thought was creepy.
Was creepy. But, you know, I mean, it's established that he was...
I fully understand the situation, but I can see how that comes across as creepy.
It felt like, you know, he's taking a photo of her, so... To make her feel more real and recognized in this bad situation. So kind of a pat on the back through
photography.
Yeah. creepy from photography hidden.
But it's also it's becomes one of those ominous photos now, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, the last photo of her before she gets ripped apart by a Demogorgon creature from the upside down. But it was just a phenomenal series. Like I thought even the location with the cliff and that lake below the cliff, like in the mine or whatever it was, the quarry, that location in itself was just, it was used so well. Like it wasn't just a once-off thing. It's like, oh, here's a cool location, let's just use it. And it was actually, it became a part of the story in the longer term as well.
And it looked so great in that scene when the kids are hugging each other.
Yeah.
And behind them's the rest of the quarry, like a mountain, enforcing their bond. Just looked so great.
No, it was the shots and the way it was put together was really good. Like I really, really liked it as a show.
Yeah, and child actors that didn't suck.
Oh, they were great. The acting on all levels I thought was really good. The kids were super, super cute and really good actors. So it's a rare combination, I thought. So it'll be interesting to see how they do, because season 2, they said, is going to take place a year later. I think it's a year later because they're like the boys, like one of them, their voice has already broken. Oh, I think the one who plays Dustin. So they're going to wait for all of them sort of catch up and sort of get through puberty a little bit, and then they'll film the next season. So
it's so sad because I thought, I hoped that it would play like 10 years later or something like that.
I'm pretty sure it's going to be a year because, it's going to pick up like where this one left off a little bit. So now that Will's back, it's this speculation, not so much spoiler, but I think, you know, they need to now get on the quest to find it at 11.
Yeah.
So I think that's going to be the next phase of this. Yeah. I can't believe that she's dead.
So. No, wow, that would be so. If she, if they really kill her, it would be so sad, because she was such a likable character. It was,
yeah,
with the little things she did with her. Yeah, okay, good. She was abused by the secret organization.
Crazy doctors.
Yeah, but it just pulled the right heartstrings.
So yeah.
To get better.
No, yeah, she played it. It was a very well acted out role. Like, yeah. it was not over the top. It was kind of understated, but you could really feel it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So all around, like, Stranger Things, one of the most best shows. So bad English. I need another coffee. Is what's going on right now. So Stranger Things was awesome. Really cool.
Yeah. I'm really surprised.
All right. So. Anything else on the TV front that you've been watching? I see Justice League on here the list of things to talk about.
I just rewatched a few episodes of the animated Justice League series, and it's amazing how well that series aged, and not just on a technical level, but on a writing level. I mean, Wonder Woman's characterization and Shayera's characterization could have been done different through the 2016 lens and how far we've come. And what I also realized was that how important logos on the chest of superheroes are.
Why?
Because Dr. Fate looks like he just has a mono breast, so to say.
Yeah.
While every other character who has a logo on his breast looks like he has the little cavity between his two, between the,
right,
the breastplates. And then Dr. Fate comes in. And the first thing I ask is, has he already scheduled the operation to get a duo boob, so to say?
That's an interesting thing to take away. Yeah. I like it.
That was the first thing I realized when I saw the episode where the Amazo cyborg returns, but because he also has the mono chest.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, for a lot of male characters, that's normal, right? It's to just have one line across the breast, or the chest in this case.
But as soon
just
as
to a, say, I've got pectoral muscles.
I just felt like as soon as a logo is there, you just paste
you assume
in the physique.
Yeah, well,
still a great series.
Yeah, I mean, that was the Paul Dini series, right? Yeah. For the original Justice League. What I really liked about that series was all the stories happen in two episode.
Yeah.
So each story arc is over two episodes. So every two episodes, it's a new story arc, which is great for when you're watching it like on a Saturday morning and you just want like one complete story.
Yeah.
Because you know there's a definite amount of time that you can put in and get a full story. Yeah. So that was cool. Yeah, that was a fun show. And all the Paul Dini, Bruce Timm stuff was really cool. So
the only sad thing was I watched the Task Force SX episode after I watched Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
And I thought, why didn't they get the guys who wrote the episode? And it was Dwayne McDuffie and Darwin Cook.
Right. Oh, right. Well, that's why.
It was a real bummer.
That's why. Yeah. Did you watch The Killing Joke? So it's not a TV, I guess, review, but
no,
animated movie.
But I refuse to watch that.
Yeah, I mean, me too. I mean, as much as I want to watch it, I'd rather just reread the book because I've heard it's not all that great. So, all right, cool. So let's move on then. Anything else happening from a TV side? I mean, I've been watching BoJack Horseman season 3. I've been enjoying that.
Yeah, I have.
Do you watch BoJack?
I watched the first two or three episodes, and then Rick and Morty came along, and that took a long time.
Yeah, BoJack's really, it's a very different show. Obviously, it's not superheroes, but it's pretty cool. If you haven't gotten into it, definitely do.
What I saw of it, I liked a lot.
Yeah, if you're interested in like, you know, that Hollywood story, it's more of a Hollywood, California, West Coast kind of thing. But BoJack as a character is extremely, and all the characters in the show actually are very well drawn out. Really interesting to watch. And just the puns, the animal puns and jokes that are in that show. It's just amazing. There's so much going on, like not just what they're saying, but even in the background. It's hilarious.
Have you finished the third season?
No, I'm like halfway through the third season now.
Okay.
It's really cool. Anyway, you should, I'll let you get into that and then we can discuss later on. All right, so that's pretty much TV then, right? I don't think there's anything else that's going on since the last time. So, what have you been reading?
I've started Life Debt, which is a Star Wars novel. It continues the other book Chuck Wendig wrote that should have acted as a prequel for The Force Awakens.
Mm-hmm.
But
what's it called?
That's a good question. I don't know what the first book was called because I haven't finished it yet. Because
what's the current book called?
Life Debt.
Life Debt.
Around Kashyyyk, the Wookiee planet, and how how they'll kick the Imperial forces off that planet.
All right.
It features Han Solo and Chewbacca, but I can't get into the books, into those two books.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, I enjoyed all the other Star Wars books that came beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps I'm just burned out on Star Wars because I can't get into Bloodlines either. I'm like halfway through that book, and none of those grabs me like all the other books we got before The Force Awakens.
Right. And are these canon now? So
they are canon. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
But there's a novel called Beast by an author who's called Paul Kingsnorth.
Right.
And it's about a guy leaving London, I think, to live in the wild, so to say. And he slowly goes mad. And it's only 300 pages.
Wow.
It's a really, it's a haunting thing. Because at the beginning, it feels like, yeah, that's the thing one should do to get in tune with himself again. And with the actual world. But as the novel progresses and things are brought up, you also see the thing more critical to take oneself out of civilization like that.
So it becomes too real for him, or you mean just in terms of mentally?
Yeah, just the issues with leaving people behind. He leaves behind his wife and his unborn kid at that point,
mm-hmm.
And just the egomanical proportions.
Right.
That you kick off for not just not it's not you you don't affect yourself with that decision to leave your old life, so to say, but you affect a lot of things around you. And when you come back, can you get back into the wheel? Are you able to get back into the wheel? And also his mental breakdown, because that also gets emphasized in the writing, because he loses words, and it's just such a descent into the madness that comes
into the madness of
into the whole self-finding trip,
the madness of self-discovery. Is that interesting?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a great counterpoint to stories like Wild and like, you know, all those ones where people kind of like leave civilization to find themselves in the woods, and it's such a great cathartic kind of journey of self-discovery.
Yeah.
Whereas this is kind of the counterpoint to that.
Yeah,
it sounds like
it romanticizes the whole notion of going off the grid at mm-hmm. first, but as it progresses, you really get a sense for that you have to keep yourself anchored to something. You can't just go out into the wild by yourself. You need an anchor, because otherwise you go mad.
Okay, that's quite interesting. And what's this? It's a short story, right? So what's it called?
Yeah, it's called Beast.
Beast by who?
Paul Kingsnorth.
Paul Kingsnorth,
and
okay.
It's part of a series. The first novel is called The Wake, and it plays in ancient England, and is about the English fending off the invasion of whoever got there. Vikings?
Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm struggling to remember my history of the invasions now. But I think the Romans were there, and they conquered the local English tribes, and they drove them out. And then when the Romans left, the Vikings came, I believe is how that went. Because then the Vikings became, they were the Saxons, and then the Saxons were fighting against the French, effectively, the Normans.
It's the Norman. Set in the 3 years after the Norman invasion, The Wake will tell the story of a fractured band of guerrilla fighters who take up arms against the invaders. So it's the Normans.
Okay. So they're Saxons.
The
So it's the Saxons versus the Normans. Okay, which is cool. 3 years after the Norman invasion. Interesting. Does it say what year it's set in? Is it after 1066?
It's after 1066, yeah.
So it's after William the Conqueror. So this is my high school history coming out.
Oh, nice.
So it's after William the Conqueror defeats the Saxons. Because that was the year 1066. That was the Battle of Hastings, which effectively kicks off modern, not so much modern, but like English history. So it's a year that we all are taught to remember in Anglo-centric history lessons.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't have those, so I just know that the Normans were there, but not the year.
Yeah. There's actually a great show on Netflix called The Last Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
And The Last Kingdom, I think it... Yeah, so there's it's Viking invaders fighting their way through England, and all of the English... So it's kind of, you know, England itself was several different kingdoms.
Yeah.
Joined together, and those were English kingdoms. But the Vikings are effectively sweep through from the north to the south, and they defeat all the English kingdoms and take them over. And the last one that's left is down by like modern day Plymouth, and Exeter. So that's the last kingdom, and it's a story of the fight back, effectively, and it follows the story of one English kind of prince or like noble kid who was taken hostage and raised as a Viking son in the Viking family.
And he realizes his heritage?
Yeah, so he knows his heritage both ways, but he feels that he's more Viking than he is English, but he's also English and he's got claim to his father's lands. And so the story is told through his eyes and his journey between the two kingdoms or between the two forces. So it's on Netflix. It's actually an old show. I think it's like from BBC or something called The Last Kingdom. It's done quite well. Very interesting show.
Yeah, it's a good alternative because recently I started watching Merlin and the Robin Hood shows that the BBC did a while ago.
Oh, right, yeah. Because,
I mean, they are not horrible, but they're not historically accurate.
Yeah, those are a little bit B-grade in terms of their quality as well, I thought. Whereas this one comes across like a good show from Showtime or something. Like, it's not quite HBO production, but it's very authentic and it's very real. And I think historically it's close enough. So the main king at the time, I think, was like Alfred the Great or something, which is I can't remember his name specifically, but it does a good job to sort of, you know, just sort of show that history and how all of that came about.
Nice.
So definitely worth checking out if you're interested in that kind of story. That sort of came out of nowhere. I only randomly watched that because it was available on Netflix in Australia like last year.
Yeah.
And I was watching Netflix at my brother-in-law's house and he started watching it. So we just ended up watching the whole thing while I was in Australia at the time. And then I came back to America and it wasn't available here. So I couldn't recommend it to people, but I just had a look and it's actually available on American Netflix for the last couple of weeks. So I think, if you're in the US and you want to watch that, definitely check it out. I don't know if it's available in Europe.
It's available in Europe. I added it to my Netflix watch list.
Okay.
We get less, but we get some good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, so definitely check it out. It's good. Awesome. And then, so from my point of view, like for my reading list, I just finished the Expanse series for the 5 books that are out. And this is the fastest I've ever read something. I am cheating, though. I'm doing it on audiobook.
Was that the Siri thing?
So it's great because I can do the audiobooks while I'm multitasking and like walking somewhere or, you know, like in transit. So it's really cool. And The Expanse, the story, the characters, really, really awesome. I'm really enjoying that. And the season 2 trailer came out as well, which will cover some of book 2 and the remainder of book 1, I guess, from the books of the book series. The season 2 TV show starts, I think, in the next couple weeks as well. So I'm really excited for that. So if you want to see Game of Thrones set in space with awesome space action, because once you've read The Expanse and like seen how the space battles happen, because it all happens in zero gravity, and the show does such a good job to sort of do the zero gravity, because that's really hard to do, but if you've watched the behind the scenes, they use wire work and stuff like that. It's just phenomenal because you can't watch another science fiction show where they're having a battle in space and not compare it to say, oh, this is not going to work the way it should work, because The Expanse really does they pay a lot of attention to the physics of how stuff would actually work. If you had to have like a fist fight in zero gravity or fire a gun in zero gravity, and even like the speed and energy implications of like moving small things at high speed and the impact it would have on bodies and ships and planets, you know, really cool. And, you know, you were talking before about, you know, we're talking about Steven Spielberg and showing those large large world-changing events, yeah. but shown how it affects people at the small scale. That's what The Expanse does really well, because this the story involves like universe-changing things. There is like the scope of every book just gets bigger and bigger and bigger, but the story is always told from the personal point of view of a couple of specific characters.
Oh, that's great, yeah.
And so you see what's happening from their perspectives, and it's really done really well.
That sounds great.
Yeah. So I really recommend it. I mean, if you like sci-fi, this is like great sci-fi.
Do you prefer the books over the series?
Well, I would just want to rewatch the first series, because I watched season one and then I read the books. So far, the show is very close to the books, but they've adapted the show to fit into the TV format. So
okay.
There are parts of season one that cover things that happen in book two and three, but you can understand why they brought it in, because it'll be really hard to show the wider context of what's happening in the show if you only focus on the characters that book one has, if you know what I mean. So it's done really well, because what that means is over time they will show you all those characters and those arcs as we go towards all five books that have been released and the four that are still to come. But so it's an epic saga, let me tell you. Like, there's so much of stuff that I've imagined in my head, and now I just want to see how they do it on screen, because it's just going to be phenomenal. Really cool. So the Expanse, definitely worth checking out. And now that I've finished The Expanse, I've started on World War Z, so I've got continuing my Audible subscription.
And
I'm doing World War Z, so it's crazy, because I've got a friend in the UK who's got Audible as well, and the versions of World War Z in the UK and the US are different, so they don't have the same version of the book, which is crazy. So his version has a different set of, like, I'll call it cast, right? But the narrators are different compared to my version. I've got, like, my version has, like, Mark Hamill and, like, Nathan Fillion and, you know, like this all-star cast, which is really fun. And the book is written as a series of interviews with the different people who are involved in the war. And it's not kind of following one character through a journey. It's got short stories effectively from all these multiple people who are involved and had different things to do with the zombie infestation and virus outbreak and stuff like that. And so it interviews them and it gives you like little chunks of story from here and there, and you assemble the overall story out of their smaller stories. It's done very well, very compelling and very visceral in the way the descriptions of, because, you know, when you hear people telling the story of what they saw when the outbreak happened, it really paints a very realistic picture. Like, it's done quite well.
Yeah, have you already heard the part how Israel reacted to the zombie outbreak?
So I just finished that part. Yeah.
That's the only thing I know about the book, and it's so funny.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it comes across, you know, it comes across as very realistic, and I saw the movie as well, so I've seen because how that plays out in the movie. It's very interesting the way it's done. Yep. I'm not quite sure what to think of it yet, because the book, again, I'm only a couple of hours in, so a couple of chapters in. So I'm not sure how it will play out in the very end. But yeah, it's very funny.
Yeah, from what I heard, they pay a lot of attention to details, like the zombies, all the people that died in the water or became zombies in water, and the zombies are still making their way to land because they can't suffocate, and it feels so detailed.
It is very detailed in the sense of that, because that's not, so the zombies in the water are not an Israel specific thing.
No, but
where it comes from is effectively through people smuggling. And it's really funny because it's refugee people smuggling. And so these refugees who were fleeing countries that had zombie infestations and then ended up turning while they were on the ship, and the captains of the ships would just either leave them on a deserted island if they could find one, or just toss them overboard, right? So they would just like empty the cargo hold of people into the sea. And because they were zombies, they then would slowly work their way back towards land. And so there are stories of, you know, people at the beach and then zombies are just kind of walking out of the ocean. And that's part of how the infestation spread around as well. the book is actually written 10 years after the war first started, I believe. So they're now in a place in the world where things are stable and they've effectively contained the zombie infestation. And so this one sort of journalist goes around the world and starts interviewing the people who are involved. So that's kind of the premise of the book. And so they tell the stories, and so they talk about those sorts of things which happened. But yeah, it's very well thought out so far. So I'm very much enjoying it.
Oh, cool. It's good to hear.
Yeah.
I have it somewhere on my shelf, but I haven't come around to reading it yet.
Yeah, definitely give it a go. Definitely give it a go. All right, so that's our recommendations for episode 6. So that's a lot of them. I've made you write down a lot of things, Martin.
The list is not as long as I imagined it will become.
That's awesome. All right, well, that's it. Hopefully we've got a full take and we didn't lose any data and files on episode 6 this time around.
The backup recording is still working. Well, at least mine is still working.
Awesome. Yeah, my backup recording is still going as well. It's now at 300 meg, so... Awesome. So yeah, so thanks everyone if you stayed ahead, because I think we went for like 2 hours this time, or slightly longer. 216, but yeah. I think we need to cut out the first 15 minutes or so, us setting up. So we'll see how that goes out. But thanks for sticking around with episode 6, and look forward to catching you next time.
Until then.
Bye.
Ciao.